October 5th, 2011.
Around the world, people who had never met Steve Jobs gathered outside Apple stores, lighting candles, leaving flowers, sharing tears.
This wasn't the typical response to a CEO's passing. Something deeper was at play.
Jobs hadn't just sold us gadgets. He'd fundamentally rewired our relationship with the machines we carry in our pockets and place on our desks.
Before him, computers were beige boxes that intimidated us. After him, they became extensions of who we are.
The iPod didn't just play music, it became the soundtrack to our lives.
The iPhone wasn't merely a phone, it reimagined what a device could mean to us.
Even President Obama recognized it. Jobs was brave enough to think differently, bold enough to believe he could change the world, and talented enough to do it.
But how does someone develop that kind of audacious vision?
The answer lies not in following the rules, but in having the courage to break them.
Jobs never tried to blend in. Born to unmarried students and adopted by working-class parents, he pranked teachers, refused pointless homework, and skipped fifth grade entirely. At Reed College, Jobs dove into 1970s counterculture, transformative LSD experiments, pilgrimages to India, extreme fruit-only diets that inspired Apple. He studied calligraphy and attended Buddhist temples. Most would call this self-sabotage. Jobs called it education. Even at Atari, he remained defiantly strange. He refused to shower, claiming his fruitarian diet eliminated body odor. It didn't. Management moved him to night shifts, but Jobs transformed isolation into advantage. This outsider mentality became his superpower. Where experts saw computers as business tools, Jobs envisioned beautiful appliances for everyone. His 1997 Think Different campaign celebrated Einstein, Gandhi, Picasso, the misfits who changed everything. As he told Stanford graduates, "Don't be trapped by dogma, which is living with the results of other people's thinking." True innovation emerges from those willing to stand outside and imagine differently.
Jobs built his life on intuition over convention. That seemingly useless calligraphy class at Reed revolutionized the Mac's typography a decade later. His 7-month spiritual journey to India shaped his design philosophy. Those sparse Zen gardens became Apple Store layouts, and the emphasis on direct experience became intuitive user interfaces. This gut following extended to business decisions that seemed insane. When experts insisted computers needed command lines, Jobs bet everything on graphical interfaces. When the music industry fought digital distribution, he created iTunes and the iPod. When phone manufacturers competed on features, Jobs stripped everything away with the iPhone's multi-touch simplicity. Jobs cultivated intuition through voracious, eclectic reading. He reread Autobiography of a Yogi annually. The Whole Earth catalog inspired him decades before Google existed. Shakespeare's King Lear taught him about power and loyalty. This cross-pollination allowed connections others missed, blending calligraphy, architecture, and psychology into cultural phenomena. His Stanford address captured it perfectly. "You can't connect the dots looking forward. You can only connect them looking backward. So you have to trust that the dots will somehow connect in your future." Breakthrough innovations don't come from market research. They come from intuitive leaps that anticipate what we don't yet know we want.
Individual genius only takes you so far. Jobs' brilliance lay in recognizing complementary talents and forming partnerships that multiplied impact. As a teenager, he called Bill Hewlett directly for parts, securing not just components, but a summer job at Hewlett-Packard. His partnership with Steve Wozniak exemplified this talent. Wozniak's engineering genius, combined with Jobs' business acumen and design sensibility, created something neither could achieve alone. Jobs understood revolutionary work required exceptional teams. A small team of A-plus players can run circles around a giant team of B and C players, he insisted. Building the Macintosh team, he recruited musicians, poets, artists, and historians who happened to be brilliant with technology.
This interdisciplinary approach created teams capable of thinking beyond conventional boundaries. As Jobs said, "My model for business is the Beatles. They were four guys who kept each other's negative tendencies in check. They balanced each other, and the total was greater than the sum of the parts. Genius might be individual, but changing the world requires collaboration."
For Jobs, design wasn't decoration. It was function. "Design is not just what it looks like and feels like," he insisted. "Design is how it works." During Apple II production, he rejected unattractive circuit boards, despite knowing they'd be hidden inside cases. When engineers protested, he compared it to fine cabinet makers using quality wood, even for drawbacks, because the craftsman knows. Once satisfied, he had all engineers sign the inside, like artists signing their work. Jobs understood that excellence in hidden details created an integrity users could sense even if they couldn't articulate why. It's like wearing quality underwear. Nobody sees it, but you know, and that confidence radiates outward. His partnership with design chief Jonathan Ive produced candy-colored iMacs, the impossibly thin MacBook Air, and the revolutionary iPhone. The iPod exemplified this approach. Though neither the first nor cheapest MP3 player, its elegant simplicity made it a cultural phenomenon. Jobs saw himself not as an inventor, but as a discoverer. Great design reveals the essential nature of things, rather than imposing artificial complexity.
Apple cultivated believers rather than customers, positioning itself as a movement fighting conformity. The groundbreaking 1984 Super Bowl commercial, directed by Ridley Scott, showed a female athlete hurling a sledgehammer through Big Brother's screen, defining Apple as rebels who thought differently. The Think Different campaign reinforced this identity after Jobs returned in 1997. Rather than showcasing products, the ads featured visionaries like Einstein, Gandhi, and Dylan, celebrating the crazy ones, the misfits, the rebels, who push the human race forward. Jobs created a community where users felt like free thinkers while belonging to something larger. Apple strategically targeted education, donating computers to schools and offering student discounts, creating lifelong customers early. As Jobs told Time in 1997, "Apple is about people who think outside the box, people who want to use computers to help them change the world." This vision transformed customers into evangelists, spreading Apple's message more effectively than any advertising could.
At 30, Jobs was forced out of Apple. He rebounded by founding Next Computer and acquiring Pixar. Though both struggled initially, a 1993 Wall Street Journal article chronicled his steep fall from a very lofty perch. Jobs persisted. His resilience paid off spectacularly. Pixar's Toy Story became a 1995 hit, and Jobs took the company public, briefly valuing his stake at over $1 billion. As Apple floundered, he orchestrated a masterful return by convincing them to acquire Next for $400 million, bringing him back while providing the foundation for today's macOS. Jobs later called being fired among the most formative experiences of his life. At Stanford, he reflected, "The heaviness of being successful was replaced by the lightness of being a beginner again. It freed me to enter one of the most creative periods of my life." When Jobs died on October 5, 2011, spontaneous vigils worldwide revealed his legacy, transforming intimidating technology into intuitive extensions of ourselves. Bill Gates captured it perfectly. "For those of us lucky enough to get to work with him, it's been an insanely great honor." Jobs told Stanford graduates, "The only way to do great work is to love what you do." His legacy poses a question. Are you doing work you love? Are you brave enough to think differently? Because the people crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do.